First, I want to thank Albert Hirschen for setting everything up once again. I mean, Albert and Laser and Esther Libman for, in general, being a great sounding board and helping to arrange things. But Albert has handled the credit arrangement for CME, and anybody who's interested in filing for those credits should please speak to Albert. And we actually have two of these sheer series going on now. We have this one here at the Bayit, and then we have another one that goes on at Shari Shamayim, also on a monthly basis on Monday night. Some of the topics will overlap, but the difference is that this one here, the sources, as you see on your sheets, are in Hebrew. There I translate also Hebrew-English, and here it's a little more academic, whereas there is a little more practical. We'll also deal with practical over here, but the goals are a little bit different. As always, and I announce it now, but please keep it in mind throughout this year, the goal here is to present information which does lead to practical conclusions. However, ask your shul rav for psak. You want to know, I'm a doctor, I have to do X, what should I do? The answer is ask your shul rabbi. He's the one who should be fielding that. Okay, you see on the sheet in front of you four vignettes. The first two really go together, and then you have the third and the fourth that are separate categories. Let's launch right into it. The discussion is data entry on Shabbos. The issues we're going to discuss involve not only data entry in terms of a computer, but in terms of writing on Shabbos, writing a prescription on Shabbos, which things won't be allowed to write, what about recording things that are not immediately, imminently pikuach nefesh, such as recording vital signs for a nurse in a hospital to record something like that, recording non-medical information. As you can see in the last vignette, you're working in the ER, and someone wants to give you a phone number as contact information. Is that something that you're allowed to record on Shabbos? So all of these issues. And we begin with the first vignette. Jim, a resident, is doing rounds in a neurology unit. He notices that a recovering stroke victim is less responsive than he had been previously. How should he record this information or arrange for its recording? So what do you think? What are the issues that you see here? What level of concern might we have? What are we talking about? Right. You have a recovering stroke victim whose condition clearly is not stable. This is somebody who is dangerously ill. Right. In some ways, it's the easiest case to address. The fact that you don't know why he's less responsive doesn't change the fact that this is potentially a life and death issue. Good. What other possibilities might enter into this, though? What might alter your judgment on how to handle this case? Do you need to be the one to do the recording? Is it possible for you to get somebody else to do the recording? Or, if you are doing the recording, as somebody emailed me after I sent out the vignettes, even if you are to do the recording, what's the best way for you to do the recording? Is it better to write? Is it better to type? Is it better to use your left hand? All the different ways that one might record something in a less direct or in an unusual manner. The second one is roughly the same as the first in terms of the halachic aspects, but it's a different case in practice, and I wanted to mention it as well. The second vignette, which I lumped together with the first, Sam, 40 and in good health, or in otherwise good health, presents to the doctor's house with fever and cough, and on auscultation has a pneumonia. Auscultation, I learned, is using the stethoscope. So he has a pneumonia, which requires antibiotics, but not hospitalization. May a prescription be written, and how? So there are going to be variations on this case, such as you know the pharmacist and you have the option of going to the pharmacist and telling it to them without writing it down or something like that. But my basic question is, in the event that you need to write the prescription, what's the best way to actually record the prescription? So those are our first two cases. They both, yes?
Is there a difference in writing the prescription and phoning in?
Absolutely. Absolutely a difference between the two. I'm assuming that you need written communication or some means of recording something. But the option of phoning it in, depending on how your phone is set up, could well be much better than the writing option. Yeah. So We begin by noting that this is, as I wrote at the heading for vignette one, Safek Pikuach Nefesh. The case we're dealing with here is one that is potentially life and death, and the principle in halacha is, and this is relatively well known, so I didn't bother to bring the sources to back it up, but the basic principle is that Safek Pikuach Nefesh, if you're in doubt about saving a life, we treat it as the equivalent of Pikuach Nefesh itself, as saving a life with certainty. And you break Shabbos for Safek Pikuach Nefesh if you are not sure. We treat doubt just like certainty. That's a core principle within halacha. Not only that, we don't require that the doubt be a high-level doubt. It's not as though you have to be in a 50-50 situation. Even if the doubt is remote, we treat it as life and death, as Pikuach Nefesh. If you take a look on your sheets at source number one, Shulchan Aruch discusses a non-medical case, although it might become one. The case of a traveler in the wilderness who is with a caravan, and the caravan is traveling on Shabbos, and now he's supposed to stop, and they're willing to leave him an animal. He can hang out with an animal in the wilderness over Shabbos and then hope to catch up sometime later. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, Uposek imahim lishbos. What he should do is make arrangements before Shabbos that they will actually halt on Shabbos. V'imachar sheyiyu b'midbar lo yirtzu lishbos imo. But what happens if, once you get into the wilderness, they're not interested in stopping? Yochol alachas imahim chutz l'tchum. He is permitted to travel with them, even though he's beyond the boundary beyond which you're not supposed to travel on Shabbos. Nonetheless, he can travel with them. Mipnei pikuach nefesh. Because of the concern for saving his life. What's his concern? Hanging out in the wilderness over Shabbos is not generally a safe thing to do. So take a look at what the Mishnah Berurah, though, describes as the concern source base. The Mishnah Berurah writes, Yachol aleches, he can travel with them. Im misyareilis akev bamidbar, if he's afraid to stay in the wilderness. Shema yifkishu bo chayos ros, lest he encounter wild animals. O yifkiu bo listim, or bandits attack him. V'yigzalu mimenu behemto, and they might steal his animal. V'lo yuchol aleches beraglov, and he won't be able to walk on foot. V'yistaken, and then he'll be in danger. O yikhu mamono, v'lo yuchol ahachios es atzmo bamidbar, or they'll take his property, and he won't be able to survive in the wilderness. Oshiyik chumi menu malbusha bizman hakor, or maybe it's cold out and they're going to take his clothes. Kulam hu bechlal safek pikuach nefesh. All of these are included as doubtful potential saving of a life. Umuter lelech imayim, and he's allowed to travel with the caravan. Some of these are more direct. He might be attacked by someone who's going to kill him, and some of them are much less direct. They might take his animal, and then he might not be able to walk on foot. Is a less direct concern. Because now you're worried about, really, what we would call a sfex fake. It's a double doubt. Number one, maybe he won't get attacked by these people. Maybe he will get attacked. Number two, they take his animal. Maybe then he won't be able to walk to safety. He's not concerned about them actually harming him. And nonetheless, we say that's the equivalent of pikuach nefesh, of wanting to save his life, the need to save his life, and therefore we say he should violate Shabbos. Similarly, if you take a look at Gimel, another passage in the Shulchan Aruch, it's actually the subsequent passage. Maka she'ena shel chalal. If a person has a wound that's not an internal wound, nish'alin babaki ubacholo. So you ask an expert, a physician, and you also ask the doctor, you ask the patient, what his needs are, how dangerous does he feel this is, does he feel he needs it? And that's its own discussion in terms of how you weigh the opinions. But the point is the next piece. Ve'ein machal in olav Shabbos, al shiomar echad behem shu tzarech lechilul, o shiyase eitzel echad behem sakonath nefashos. You only break Shabbos if one of those whom you've consulted says you need to break it, or it seems like sakonath nefashos, like danger to a life, to one of them. That's the Shulchan Aruch's line. And the odd piece here is that last few words. Until it is sakanas nefashos for one of them, we know that. Of course, if it's sakanas nefashos, if it's danger to a life, sakanas nefashos means danger to a life. Of course, you break Shabbos. What's the question? So the Mishnah Berurah clarifies in source Dalet. Sarach lomar safek sakanas nefashos. What the text should say there is, if it's doubtful danger to a life, then you break Shabbos. Rotza lomar, meaning dafilu omrim rak shema yichbat olav hacholi v'yistakein namishari. Even if they say, well, maybe the illness will get worse, and maybe that will endanger him, nonetheless, you break Shabbos. So to apply that back to our vignettes, you're making rounds in the neurology unit, and you see that the stroke victim's condition seems to be less stable than it was. So, you know, some voice inside your head says, well, yeah, but this could be anything. The answer is, doesn't matter. Because even if it might lead to a situation in which he might deteriorate, that's good enough to warrant violating Shabbos. Or the patient who shows up with the pneumonia, and you'll say, you know what, Shabbos is ending tonight at 7 o'clock, and it's now 2:30. Maybe I could just wait until 7 o'clock. The answer is, no way. If the condition might deteriorate, you take care of it now. You don't wait. So that's number one. Having said that, maybe then we can just move on to the next set of vignettes, because case closed. Now you can just do whatever you need to do. You write your prescription, you drive him over to the ER, you do whatever it is that you need to do, and the case is closed. The answer is no, because halacha is never that simple. We have a basic machlokas, a basic debate, which we're not going to do in depth, because I want to stick this within the hour framework, if we can. And that is the debate about whether Shabbos is hutra or dechuya. Hutra, from the term mutar, means permitted. Dechuya means pushed off. And the question is this. If we say that Shabbos is overridden for pikuach nefesh to save a life, does that mean that all Shabbos concerns are gone? Do whatever you need to do, and you know, don't worry about it? Or do we say you have to minimize the disruption of Shabbos? Classic case. A woman is nearing the end of her 9th month of pregnancy. She knows that she might well end up needing to go to the hospital on Shabbos. Is there any reason for the couple to unscrew the light bulbs inside the car, in the door of the car, that aren't going to affect the way they drive or the safety of getting to the hospital at all? Just unscrew the light bulb that way. When you get into the car on Shabbos, you'll know that at least you didn't turn on those lights, even though you're driving there, but at least you minimize the disruption of Shabbos. Do you have a need to do that? If you say hutra, that Shabbos is entirely permitted, the answer is no. Once you're in this situation, you go and you do, and whatever happens along the way, happens along the way. And you break and you use your turning signals and everything else, and that's what you're supposed to do. Or do I say, dechuya, it's pushed off, but to the extent you can minimize the disruption of Shabbos, you're supposed to minimize the disruption of Shabbos. It comes up in the Gemara when they talk about somebody who has apparently a very interesting physician who tells him that he will be healed from his life-threatening situation if he eats figs. I don't know that figs have such properties, bisman hazeh, but that's the prescription. And the question is, should the person who is now going to, I guess it's the pharmacist, who is going to cut the figs, how should he work out providing the figs? What if he needs two figs, and you have one stem that has two figs attached, another stem has three figs attached, and another stem has one fig, another stem has another fig, and should you cut twice, or should you cut once? It's a big, serious debate. The reason that it's a serious debate is because of this issue of hutra versus dechuya. The Rambam, as well as the Rashba, held that Shabbos is dechuya. It is pushed off, but it is not entirely permitted. Take a look at source number 5. I excerpted a piece from the Rambam in his Laws of Shabbos. Source Hey, dechuya hi Shabbos etzal sakanas nefashos kishar kol hamitzvos. Shabbos is dechuya. It is pushed off. He doesn't use the magic word hutra, which would mean that it's entirely lifted, that it's entirely permitted. The Rush disagreed. Rabbeinu Asher, it's found in source Vav, so quoted from the authors of the Tosfos, writing in the 13th century on the Gemara, in this case writing a responsum, as disagreeing. If you take a look at source Vav, Rabbeinu Meir Heshev B'tshuva Alzeh. Rabbeinu Meir responded to this question. There was a discussion there. There was a question that was asked of the Raiva. This is a response from Rabbeinu Meir regarding violating Shabbos to save a life. V'hevi dimyon me ochal nefesh b'yom tov. And he compared saving a life on Shabbos to preparing food on Yom Tov. We know that the Torah says, whatever you need for eating, you do on Yom Tov. And no one ever thinks, well, let's minimize our cooking on Yom Tov. Let's reduce the cooking on Yom Tov so we only cook the absolute minimum. He says, "Dishochtin be Yom Tov." You're allowed to shecht on Yom Tov. De'ika aseva lo saaseh be iser malacha umaychol nevela de'im ba'alala. I'm going to jump that actually because it's not directly germane. His immediate question he was asked was the question of if someone needs meat on Shabbos, is it better to give him treif meat, which you have available, or is it better to shecht? In which case you're violating Shabbos for the Shechita, but now he's eating kosher meat. That was the, that's another one. That's a physician who recommends red meat to save the patient's life. But I'm jumping to after the period in the end of the third line. V'hachinami, here too, just like when you're dealing with Yom Tov, we say that you cook on Yom Tov for Yom Tov meals, and you're not supposed to minimize it. Yom Tov is entirely permitted for ochel nefesh, for eating, for preparing food for eating. V'hachinami, here too, kevan shi tira Torah pikuach nefesh. Once the Torah says you do what you need to do to save a life, havi kol malacha sha'osa b'shabbos b'shvil chola sheyesh bo sakana ki ilu asa'a b'chol. Any malacha you perform on Shabbos in order to save a life is the same for, you know, for a patient who is dangerously ill is as though you had done it during the week. There is no distinction between this I could have done, this I didn't need to do, whatever it is, you do whatever it is. That's the position of the Rosh. In practice, the Tzitz Eliezer, quotes of Shlomo Kluger, others rule that we say Shabbos is dechuya. Shabbos is pushed off, like the Rambam says, but not entirely overridden. And therefore, we do need to minimize whatever we do. So the patient shows up at your door and needs a prescription. We don't say, just write it and be done with it. We say, try to reduce to the extent possible the violation of the law. That's what we actually do in practice. So, I need to find a way to minimize violation. Note that when I try to find a way to minimize violation, I'm not allowed to play games on Shabbos trying to minimize the violation of Shabbos. In other words, if you're going to sit there trying to think, should I do it with my left hand? Should I do it this way? Should I do it that way? The patient, God forbid, is going to expire. You can't do that. If you take a look at the Shulchan Aruch in Source Zion, Mishi yesh lo choli shal sakana mitzvah lachalal oleves haShabbos. If a person is dangerously ill, it is a mitzvah to violate Shabbos for him. Vazariz harezim eshubach. One who is energetic in doing it, it is praiseworthy. Vahashoel, and one who asks a shayla, harezim shovech damim, is a murderer. So what that means is, you got to do what we're doing, which is ask the question in advance of being in that situation so that you know what to do when the situation comes up. When you're in that situation, that's not the time to start asking the shayla of, Rabbi, how should I do this? So it's important to know in advance. So what strategies do we have? Right, but he also offers the proviso that it's not going to harm the patient's health. Right.
But he does want you to take that extra.
Right. That's true. Right. The Rama does note that in the event that you could safely do this, that's the responsibility. That's correct. So what strategies could I employ? Well, remember the definition of writing. The Mishnah, it's in Source Ches, says, Hakosev shtei osios behelem echot chayev. If you write two meaningful marks in one span of forgetting that it's Shabbos, they're dealing with a mistaken violation of Shabbos, chayev, you're liable. Kasav bidyo, besam, besikra, bekumus, uvekankantum, they list different types of inks. Whatever ink you use, uvechol davar shehu roshem, with anything that will make a lasting mark, .. I'm skipping a little bit. Chayav, one is liable. That's the principle we need to know right now, that writing involves writing with something that will make a mark on a material. He continues to discuss materials. If you take a look at the Rambam in Source Tes, Ein hakosev chayav ad sheyichtov bedavar haroshem ve'omed. And he gives you examples. He says, one who writes is not liable unless he writes with something that will make a mark that will stand. Kigon, he tells you, Dio, Shor, Sikra, Kumus, Kankantum, Kyotze, Bahen. Kalkantus is the edition that I was working from, but it's the same as Kankantum. V'yichtov al davar shemiskayem haksav alav. And you have to write on a surface on which the text will last. Kigon, he lists or cloth, different types of parchment, niyar, wood-based paper, v'eitz, ukayotzebem, and things like that. So what your definition of Shabbos is, that you make a mark on a material. So Rabbi J. David Bleich quotes Rabbi Shua Neuwirth, who is himself quoting Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, saying that when it comes to a computer screen or recording of any kind on a magnetic tape, on an electronic material, this is not called writing. Writing is imposing one material on another, or manipulating a material to form a text that's actually going to endure and be visible. That's going to matter when we come back to talk about data entry, electronic data entry. So What are my strategies? So one strategy is to not write it in Hebrew, lest anyone think they were going to go to a pharmacist and write the prescription in Hebrew. Don't write it in Hebrew. I know what you're thinking. It's Shabbos. Isn't it better to do it in Hebrew? No. And this is based on an idea expressed in the Or Zeruah. The Or Zeruah said that writing, remember that in order to violate Shabbos, you have to perform a malacha that's similar to what was done in the Mishkan, the traveling temple that the Jews had in the wilderness. There they made marks on the boards so that when they disassembled and reassembled the Mishkan, they would know board A goes next to board B. It was just like IKEA or Kmart, and it was nicer stuff. But you wrote on it using Hebrew letters. Therefore, if it's in some other language, that's not called the De'oraisa, the biblical prohibition of writing. That's the idea, and his view is actually quoted by Rav Moshe Isserles in the Ramah. That's taken as halacha by the Ramah. There's a lot we could say on this. A couple of years ago, we did a shiur on writing on Shabbos in the predecessor to this series, and we talked about it more in depth then. Suffice it to say that almost every posek rejects this idea of the Ramah. In practice, the Mishnah Berurah says, "Come on." The Aruch HaShulchan rejects it outright. Nonetheless, Rav Avadya Yosef in a Tshuva in Chelek Gimel, it's volume 3, Tshuva Chav Gimel number 23, quotes authorities who support the view of the Or Zeruah, and Rabbi Avram Sofer Avraham quotes in his Nishmas Avram the view of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, and he reiterated it in an email to me that yes, in fact, he's willing to rely on this as a leniency to help permit writing on Shabbos. The idea of not writing in Hebrew could actually be relied upon. So that already could reduce the writing to a derabbanan, which is very important, because if it's a derabbanan rather than a deoraisa, if it's rabbinic rather than biblical, then our standards for permitting it are much more lax. So that's a very important possibility. So right, so would it be Ksav Ivri or Ksav Ashuri? In the Mishkan, presumably they're using Ksav Ivri, which is where they're writing it. This is the Mishkan.
So someone in Israel, they don't use.
That's an interesting argument, right? I think that's actually one of the arguments that's brought against this view. Actually, is that they weren't using our alphabet anyway. They're using Ksav Ivri in the Mishkan. At least it depends on your view in the Gemara and Megillah, but I think the way we would hold, we say in general, we assume that yeah, they're using slavery. So it is one of the points raised against this. A second option for those who just can't resist writing in Hebrew, or for those who want to satisfy the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan, two major halachic authorities who reject this idea that writing out of Hebrew turns it into a rabbinic prohibition. Another approach is to write in. To write your text using whatever hand is not your normal hand for writing. The idea is that if you're normally a righty, you would write it with your left. If you're normally a lefty, you would write it with your right hand. Sorry? Right, knowing physicians and their handwriting, I'm not sure.
It doesn't matter which hand they write it with.
Says the pharmacist who has to read it. Understood. If you take a look on your sheet, it's source Yudalit. I jumped some sources unwittingly. I didn't mean to actually jump them, but I ended up doing it. But if you take a look, it's source Yudalit. First of all, Yud Gimel, just to see how clearly the Mishnah Berurah dismisses this idea. He says, Ayin Meber Alacha. He says, See Ber Alacha, which also is his writing. Shebi Arnu Didaz Or Zeruah Daz Yechidahi. We clarify there that the view of the Or Zeruah regarding Hebrew writing versus other languages is a lone view. Ve'ema Shumakom B'Shas V'Cholah Poskim Chol Gemalzeh. It has no place in the Gemara, and every halachic authority worth his salt disagrees, says the Mishnah Berurah. So, worth noting. But he continues in source Yud Dalit to say, Hakosei Bismol Ola Achar Yado. If a person writes with his left hand or after his hand, the back of his hand, which means literally the back of his hand, if you look in brackets, Dahainu Begav Yado, meaning the back of his hand. He gripped his pen through his fingers and then wrote this way on the paper, right? So he's writing like that and he's writing with the pen coming out that way. That's abnormal. Biraglo, gripping it in his foot. Befiv, in his mouth. Marpeko, his elbow. The Potter, in all those cases, you're exempt. I don't know that I recommend this if time is an issue, or if you're actually writing a prescription that needs to be interpreted by the physician, by the pharmacist. But that's the suggestion. Because that's not the normal way of writing. But you should know, there is still a prohibition. In other words, one can't say this isn't called writing altogether and then I can just do it whenever I want to. That doesn't work. It's still an issur d'rabbanan. It's still rabbinically prohibited. Note, it has nothing to do with the clarity of the handwriting. Meaning, we joke about it in terms of the physician's handwriting. But if I am a righty and I write with my right hand, it doesn't matter that my text is unclear. That's still a biblical violation of Shabbos. Whereas if I write with my left hand and the text is perfectly clear, it's still only a derabbanan. It's still only rabbinically prohibited. The point is that you're changing the way you write. The point is not that you are changing the writing result. So that's something that's very important to remember. So that's another strategy. A third strategy, which is suggested by the Tzomet folks in Israel, is typing it on a keyboard, where you're not printing it out. Printing it out means you're writing. If you're back to square one, it just wasn't with your hand. But it's considered a normal way to write. But we're talking about, now what if you press the print button with your left hand? So would that be called abnormal? Hang on, Albert, just give me 1 second to go through the idea, and then you'll challenge it. But the folks at Somet argue that since when you type something and it's recorded only digitally, and it's going to be sent digitally, that's a derabbanan. They hold, not following the view of the Chazon Ish, that use of electricity where it isn't an incandescent bulb with a filament is fundamentally rabbinic. So they say that's better to do than to write it out, even if you're writing it out in an abnormal way. Because when you write it in an abnormal way, you're performing what is fundamentally a biblical malacha in an unusual way. When you do this, it's not related to a biblical malacha when you do it on the keyboard. So take a look at Source Tesvav, pulled off of a website where they discuss this, and they discuss their Shab'at. Their Shab'at is a pen with disappearing ink, which we'll get to. But they say, in kayamos shteyav sharuyos shkulos, if you have two equal options, ksiva be'et shabbat mitnadef, using their Shabbos pen, which has disappearing ink, or a machshev, or a computer, yesh lahadif machshev, better to use the computer, im lo nidresh as hadpasa, assuming that printing is not going to be required. And their explanation is, it goes on to say, haksiva b'machshev enok inena ksiva klal. Because writing on a computer is not writing at all. El rishumim electronium o electromagnetium. If you ever wanted to know how to write that in Hebrew, now you know. These are electronic or electromagnetic impulses, and that's it. Meidach be'ed Shabbos haksiva hi ksiva mamashit el shiyesh bapegam she'ena miskayemes. As opposed to the Shabbos pen, where it is writing, it's just not enduring. So better, they suggest, for you to type it in. Albert.
But in today's climate, is directly attached to the printer in the hospital, therefore it's indirect.
It's not directly attached to the computer in the hospital because you're sending it via email? Is that what you're suggesting?
Because you're sending it through a network.
Yeah, sending it through a network.
It's not me sending it and I have a direct impact. There's a measurable delay from the time I hit the print button until it goes to the network and prints off.
Right. So Albert wants to argue that this is kalach sheni. This is a secondary force when it's actually printed because you have a delay. That's a very interesting idea that you could argue that it's not. In other words, it's one thing when my computer is wired to my printer and I push the button and it's going straight through. There also you could make an argument, by the way, even in such a direct case. But here, where I'm sending it... I'm sorry? Right. No, you have a queue of some kind. Right, and you don't have control of when it's going to come out of the queue. It's not randomized. It's not quite like that. But on the other hand, it's not necessarily that direct. It's an interesting point. I'm not sure how that would play in. It's an interesting point. Yes,
so,
Eddie.
So the fact that they say that on the computer is better than this Eid Shabbat, I don't understand how that reconciles with Source 9 or other work. Actually, the definition of writing is Sheikh Shabbat Varha or Sheikh Shabbat Omeid, that it says. So if it's disappearing, then that does not automatically. disqualify it as writing?
Right, so it seems that their view is that when the Rambam writes, Roshem ve'omeid, that it's going to be omeid, that it's not an inherent definition of writing piece, but that it's the, or the omeid piece isn't inherent, but it's about it being a more complete act of writing, or a less complete act of writing. That's going to be how they'll explain that Rambam. Yeah. Yes?
What if you know that someone, probably a non-Jew, is going to preach it?
Right, so knowing that he's going to print it is actually not necessarily a problem, but I'm going to come back to that in the next vignette. It's in the last vignette. I'm going to talk about working with someone who isn't Jewish, who you know is going to do something that you didn't do, but you're basically instructing them to do. So that's what we'll have to come to that then. And if I don't clarify then, make sure to ask me, please.
Can I ask a sort of similar? Is that in the beginning you said that if you can avoid a writing prescription by just going to the pharmacist and just giving it verbally, then obviously that's preferable, but actually, I sort of did that once, and I sort of had a feeling that the pharmacist was Jewish, and because I was telling verbally, he started writing.
Yes. Where he's Jewish, you definitely have an added level of complication, which I'm also going to, I'll get to there. But the answer basically is if he's Jewish, you have problems. That's the easy answer. We don't say that, you know, I won't violate Shabbos, but I can get him to be my substitute on Shabbos. Okay. So, what about this disappearing ink pen? So I don't want to spend a lot of time on it now. I'd rather put it at the end, the disappearing ink pen, only because I don't think it's practical for most people. I'm trying to stick to what people end up doing. So if anyone wants at the end, I'll be glad to come back to this Shav 8 and explain the disappearing ink pen and why this may help, as well as a very interesting discussion that I had actually with Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Avraham about Rosh Shlomo Zalman's definition of what counts as disappearing. So for those who can stay at the end, it's actually an interesting topic. But what we've said now, so far, is that the physician who's in a position of writing something down to save lives should ideally opt for doing it in an unusual way. The left hand is one. Certainly not doing it in Hebrew. Again, here, he wasn't going to do it in Hebrew anyway. Doing it with a keyboard seems to be also, doing it electronically seems to be a better option. These are options that one should choose in this situation.
I just want to tell you practically, I've seen many prescriptions in Israel, and they're all written in English.
Really?
Yes.
No kidding. That's very interesting. Thank you. And that had nothing to do with Shabbos. That was a weekday thing also. They were writing it in English. Yes. In addition to that, when we first discussed writing on Shabbos in the Shira a couple of years ago, we discussed whether it's better to have one's child do it. In the event that the patient comes to the house and you have your kid there, maybe you should have your kid do it. The answer is no. There's a longer explanation for why the answer is no, but the answer is absolutely not. In short, chinuch requires that we not train our children to violate Shabbos. So that's a very important principle, which is worthy of unpacking at some point. What about having someone who isn't Jewish do it? I have a non-Jewish neighbor. Can I go over to the non-Jewish neighbor? So that's going to come into that question that we'll address in vignette 3. Okay. What about the second issue? The second vignette. A hospital step-down ICU unit. Vital signs are checked every 4 hours. Sarah, a nurse, is charged with doing this on her Shabbos shift and recording the results, even if the signs are unchanged from the previous recording. So she goes in, and it says the same thing it said last time, or you know, even better, it's a step-down ICU unit. The patient was already apparently stable. And now 4 hours later, the nurse comes in and checks, and yeah, patient's still stable. So I'm not dealing with where you have telemetry such that it's going to go straight from your blood pressure machine to be recorded in the file, but where they're actually going to say, okay, the nurse is supposed to walk over to the terminal in the corner and type that in or write that in if they haven't switched off of written records yet. How should she record this information or arrange for its recording? So the principles of what the best way is to write still are the same as they were in vignette number one. The key question here is recording vital signs when this really doesn't seem to be about pikuach nefesh. Now, Jeff pointed out to me that it could be pikuach nefesh because maybe right now nothing has changed. But in 4 hours from now, they're going to want to check again. And then they may find that things have changed, and they want to know, did that change in the last 4 hours? Did that change in the last 8 hours? Did that change in the last 12 hours? And if you have a gap because you didn't feel like writing it down because it was the same thing as before, you've lost your record. Yes?
Just another very important thing is legally. Right. They're huge legal.
Right. So the legal ramifications, and that's true just in general, not just the broader legal possibilities, but simply you have a job in the hospital, and the job is do this, and you don't do it. The answer would be, if you can't conform to halacha and conform with the secular law, then it's time to find a different job. The question I think that we have to address is there a way within the halacha right to conform to the expectations of pikuach nefesh and to make sure that you're within the bounds of what you were hired to do and what you're responsible to do. So this comes back to something we discussed also in the shiur last year on medical imaging, in the X-ray discussion. We talked about the patient who seems to have some kind of a pneumonia and has a physician who is extra careful, and the physician always does certain exams and wants to do them on Shabbos. Whether it's part of the general protocol or not part of the general protocol, this is what he always does. Even though he thinks he pretty much knows what the situation is. So do you do that on Shabbos? So take a look, please, at Source Yud Tes and the Shulchan Aruch statement about routine care. Maka shel chalal eina tzricha omed. This is an internal wound. An internal wound does not require any evaluation to determine what do I do on Shabbos, what do I not do on Shabbos. You do it. Internal wounds were assumed by the Shulchan Aruch and before him to be automatically dangerous. Shafilu ein sham bikiyim v'chola eino omer klum. Even if there are no experts, and the patient says nothing about, oh, I need care, nonetheless, osim lo kol shiragilim la'asos lo b'chol. You do for the patient anything you would do normally during the week. Routine patient care is required for this patient who is in a general pikuach nefesh situation. And the Mishnah Berura writes in Source Chaf, Umashma afilu afal pisha ein bo sakana b'mnias hadavar hahu. This indicates, this line in the Shulchan Aruch indicates, even if there is no danger in failing to do whatever specific thing you're talking about, kevan shacholi yesh bo sakana, because the overall condition involves danger, v'yesh ba'davar tzarach tzas, and there is some need for this care, or regil lasas lo b'chol, and they normally do this during the week, osin gam b'shabbos, you do it on Shabbos as well. So if that's the routine protocol, you do it even if this particular activity doesn't have life-saving connotations. It doesn't make a difference, that's routine care. Now, the Nishmas Avram quotes of Yeshua Neuwirth, on the case of the patient with a lung infection, where this physician always x-rays, even if it seems to be obvious, and Yeshua Neuwirth says, absolutely, you do it. All of this comes, by the way, from the view of the Ramban. Ramban is the pioneer on this. What if it's only standard procedure for this particular physician? This is what he always does, but most physicians don't. So there, the ruling seemed to be that if it's really just something he does, and there is no substantive concern, and even he acknowledges it, it's not that he has any particular reason to think there's a danger, it's just this is what I always do, at that point you should back down from doing it on Shabbos. If it's just you do it because this is what you always do, the same way the baseball player pulls up his right sock because he's superstitious before he goes out to the mound, at a certain point you do have to say, this isn't medically warranted on Shabbos. But if this is acknowledged as part of the protocol for what we do for these patients in order to have a good outcome, then that's what we do.
What does he mean when he says, osim lo kosher, gilim lasas lo b'chol? Is he getting into the hutra d'chuya discussion?
Well, by definition, this has to, yeah. Because if you said hutra, then he wouldn't even need the line. You would do anything that you saw fit.
Is he saying that you can do it without
right, no compunctions about it, but that doesn't mean, no, I think the way I do it still has to be minimized.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. He's explaining what I should do, not how I should do it. So, for example, in the x-ray case, if the x-ray is part of routine care, I'm supposed to do the x-ray. He hasn't said how I do it. Is it better for me to have a non-Jewish technician do it? Is it better for me to push the button with my left hand? Is it better for me to use digital technology as opposed to printing it out on a plate? All those things I'm still going to have to work through because of the chuya. Yeah. Okay. So that covers vignette two. What we're saying is, do the normal routine things, including recording the vital signs, but try to conform to the Rabbanan things that we set up in vignette one. So what about vignette three? This person in the ER, right? Go back to the vignette. Chaim is an ER nurse working in the hospital on Shabbos. A patient's wife needs to leave for several hours and she wants to give Chaim her phone number as an emergency contact. In what way may Chaim record the information or arrange for its recording? What can he do for this? So, I will stipulate here, it's best to have someone who isn't Jewish do the writing. It's not medical information. It's not part of patient care in any natural way. It's not feeding into the results. It's just that, the wife would like to be notified. Probably legally she needs to be notified for certain things. She's the one who's going to make decisions if the patient is unconscious. But what's the best way to have a non-Jew write it? And this enters us into a discussion about what's called Amira La'akum. There's a rabbinic prohibition against telling a non-Jew to do malacha on Shabbos. Now, why this is true is actually a great debate. Rashi brings two sources. Rashi in the Gemara in Shabbos. Did I bring it here on your sheet? No, I did not. Rashi in the Gemara in Shabbos, it's Daf Kuf Nun Gimel Amud Aleph, 153a. It starts, Mai Taima, says the issue is Shlichus. He's your emissary. He's your proxy. If you tell someone, write on Shabbos, it's like you're writing on Shabbos. The same way that I send somebody to do a mitzvah, it's as though I did the mitzvah. So if I say to somebody, write something down, it's as though I wrote it down. That's actually problematic, because we have a principle, Ein Shlichus La'akum. There's no such thing as having a non-Jew as your proxy. I can make a Jew as my proxy to make Kiddush, and I'll answer Amen or whatever. Whether that's really proxy is actually a separate discussion. So let me throw that case out. I can make a Jew a proxy for all sorts of legal things. I can't necessarily make a non-Jew as my proxy. Rav Lau, in an article in the 12th volume of the Tchumen series, has a nice article on this concern from Rashi and how serious this should be. But that's okay, because Rashi in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Tezvav Amud Aleph 15a, starting with Rekevan, gives a different explanation. And there he says, the issue is Vidaber Davar. I'm not allowed to speak on Shabbos about weekday things. So telling someone to write is a violation of that principle of Vidaber Davar. The stipler in his Kilas Yaakov, on Shabbos, it's Simen Nun Hei, says that both issues apply. V'davar davar is Shabbos specific. I'm not allowed to speak on Shabbos about weekday activities, telling somebody to do something that I can't do on Shabbos. However, that would permit me on Friday. On Friday, I could say to a non-Jew, I want you to do X for me on Shabbos. On the other end, Shlichus, not making him my proxy, will cover Friday also. I can't tell him on Friday to do something on Shabbos either, which is true in Halacha. I can't tell a non-Jew on Friday, do this for me on Shabbos, if it's something I wouldn't be allowed to do. I can't tell him on Shabbos, do something for me that I wouldn't be allowed to do. So those are two sources for it. And then there's a third source, the Sefer Mitzvos Gadol, the Smag, in Prohibition number 75, building off of a medrash that appears in the Mechilta, which is also quoted in the Beis Yosef in Arachayim, the end of Reish Mem Dalet, says, the Torah says, Kol malacha lo ye'aseh bahem. No malacha shall be done on Shabbos. No malacha shall be done on Shabbos. That's different from saying you shall do on Shabbos. It shall be done means I can't arrange for my malacha to be done by somebody else on Shabbos, even if I will be doing nothing. It doesn't make a difference. I can't arrange for my malacha to be done by somebody else. Even though we're actually quoting a biblical pasuk, the principle in any case is that this is an asmachta. The Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo says, and this is asmachta, it's not a biblical prohibition, it is a rabbinic prohibition. So I am not allowed to tell someone who isn't Jewish, do this for me on Shabbos. There's a separate issue also about not benefiting from things that he does on Shabbos, but that's not directly germane here. So what should I do? What am I supposed to do now? So the best approach seems to be what's called amira de amira, which means I tell someone else who tells someone else, both of them not Jewish, to do this thing on Shabbos. That way, the end result is not me telling someone to do something on Shabbos. They're doing it because they were told to by some other non-Jew. They're not doing it because I told them to do it. They're doing it because some other person who wasn't Jewish told them that they should do this, today. They're not doing it for me. This halachic argument comes up in the discussions about sending an express letter on Friday. And the suggestion that was brought in some poskim was, if I go to the post office and I say, send this today, the person behind the counter is not the one who's actually going to be bringing it on Shabbos. They're telling somebody else. And so therefore, you might be able to argue, it's amira da amira. It's now the delivery person is doing it at the instruction of some other person who isn't Jewish. Leave aside the express letter discussion because there's a lot more to say on that, but try to apply that here. Maybe what you can do is tell the wife, please go to the receptionist and have the receptionist write it down, rather than having me write this down. In any case, it was also pointed out to me, I think it was Dr. Libman who pointed this out, that as a general rule, you aren't going to have medical personnel being the ones to write down the contact information. So this is less germane in any case, but you can still come up with it. You know, you tweak the case and come up with something that where it does happen. But that would be the idea. Where does this? Where do we find this quoted in halacha? Sorry. Where do we find this quoted in halacha? Take a look at the Mishnah Berurah where he gives you the sources. It's source Chaf Aleph. Mishnah Berurah writes, "Vida, you should know, dema dekai malan amira le'eno Yehudi shavus." Who afilu im omer le'eno Yehudi, sheyomer le'eno Yehudi acher, la'asos lo malacha b'shabbos. The first view he cites says that when we say you can't tell a non-Jew, it's a shavus, it's a rabbinic prohibition, you can't tell a non-Jew to do malacha for you on Shabbos, even if he tells another non-Jew, you tell him, tell another non-Jew to do it, it's still prohibited. He's quoting the Avodas HaGirshuni, but then he quotes, if you're in Bakrak and the Chavos Yair, the Chavos Yair Simanun Gimel Mitzadei Lahakel Bazeh as being lenient. The Kosh came B'davar She'eno Elam Yishum Shavus, and certainly if what you're talking about is a rabbinic prohibition anyway, which it isn't if you're talking about writing, because you're not going to tell her, go tell the receptionist to write this down with her left hand. Give the receptionist my disappearing ink pen to go write down your phone number. You could try that, I guess, but not a good idea. And he says, "V'ayim b'sefer Achayim shekasav b'makom hefsed gadol yesh lismoch al hamekilin." See the Sefer Achayim who says that in a case of great loss, you could definitely rely on the Chavos Yair of Yair Bakrak, who says that amira da amira is actually going to be acceptable. So, what we're recommending here is that you have it go through an intermediary. Now, the truth of the matter is that there's some debate as to how this works. And where the debate, there's some debate as to where this debate actually applies. Right. Question? So it's always best for me to choose a better option, right? For me, if I have the option of amira da amira, then I'd rather do that than do amira straight. Yeah.
I don't understand why you can't just say, I can't write this down, here's a piece of paper.
I'm getting there. This is actually better than that. This is considered halachically better than that.
But I understand the rationale.
Right. So the rationale comes through in a point that the Chasam Sofer makes. There's some debate as to where this debate cited in the Mishnah Berurah actually applies. The view of the Chasam Sofer, it's a tshuva in Choshen Mishpat, Kuf Pei Hei, number 185. He says that everybody agrees it's fine where the final person doing the malacha doesn't know that he's doing it for a Jew. In other words, according to the Chasam Sofer, what really bothers us is Amir La'akum means a non-Jew should not be doing malacha on thinking he's doing it for a Jew on Shabbos. Therefore, if you're taken out of the picture, it's not Amir La'akum at all, which is better than the hinting way, which is a sort of diluted Amir La'akum possibility. That's the Chasam Sofer. He says the debate is only where the non-Jew who's going to write actually does know that he's doing it for you. In other words, the non-Jew you sent says, Turchina over there sent me to go have you write this down. That's where there's a machlokas, where the Avodas HaGershuni is not going to like it. There is a separate view, you should know. The Mishnah Sacher quotes the Prima Gadim as disagreeing and saying, no, the whole debate is where he doesn't know. And everybody agrees it's us or if he does know. There was a hand.
Knows that I'm Jewish or knows that it's off?
Knows that it's on my behalf.
For me to do it.
Just knowing that it's on my behalf is sufficient. Yeah.
But in the instance you've asked, it isn't on your behalf, it's on her behalf.
Right, so that's going to bring me to another point. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not sure I agree with that. Because once she's asked you to write it down for her, then it sort of is on your behalf.
No, she wants to be a foreigner. she's giving you the number because she wants to know.
Right. I sent her in a direction in which someone will end up writing it down. It's not as though it was my responsibility to make sure we had her phone number. If she wasn't here, if she wasn't in the ER, no one would be telling me, Torchino, go get the wife's phone number.
Maybe they would.
If they would, then it could be benefiting me.
She would give it to you if you have to call her to inform about her husband's situation, and then you would potentially
right.
write it down.
Right. But this is something that comes up, as I mentioned before, you're not allowed to benefit from malacha done by a non-Jew on Shabbos. So the argument is made by the poskim, by the authorities, that if it's a non-Jew who's doing it on behalf of a non-Jewish patient, there's no issue of benefit because it's not you're not benefiting. It's really about the care of the non-Jewish patient. It's not you who is involved. So that's true.
In this vignette, the assumption here is that there's no chola. There's no Indian of suffering in the fashion.
Well, there's a chola, but it's not tied to writing down the number.
It's irrelevant. So the question really is what is this case really about? It's a case of a mir la'akum that stands on its own. Versus if you had a mir la'akum, for example, if you used it in case one.
Right.
Right? So would a mir la'akum be a better, would you use it there? Or are you back to the same thing? You're still down to a drabbanan. So
right.
It's no different than writing with your left hand.
Right. So Lather makes a really good point here, which is that this is really a standalone amir la'akum case. I mean, it adds a certain urgency when you say it's in the ER.
Right, but you don't have that, because amir la'akum, the makam, and there's many makams you can put in with the mutzer.
Right.
But here, I'm trying to think of what is it that you're trying to accomplish.
Right.
So it's really a mir la'akum at the end, right?
Right. Right. Just because I saw Albert going around with the paper, please, it's very important that you sign in and have an email address, even if you're not getting credit, only because for two reasons. Number one, I like to send out the Myra Makomos, these source sheets in advance for the next one, but also because if something comes up in this year and I give an answer to something and then later on I rethink it, I'd like to be able to be in touch with you to let you know. So that's another reason to make sure that your email address is on there. Sorry, going back to Laser's point, though, about this, it's true that if I'm in a situation in which this impacts patient care, like vignette one, it's the fact that I've reduced it to a drabbanan by telling a non-Jew is already wonderful and already takes it down, much as the options we gave before do. So that's absolutely true. Following hutra dechuya, though, it's always best if I can reduce it still further. So that's another reason to look at this. The amira da amira, but I'm going to come back to that because I have one last point on vignette 1 and 2 and this issue, so don't close the book on that. If amira da amira is not an option, the receptionist is Jewish, or some way that amira da amira is not an option, I can't send her to somebody else. So what do I do to get this woman to write down her phone number for me instead of me writing it down?
Is this woman Jewish?
No, she is not Jewish. The woman herself is not Jewish. That's my stipulation. So what am I supposed to do? So take a look at source Chav Beis. The Shulchan Aruch writes, regarding hiring someone who isn't Jewish or asking someone who isn't Jewish to do something for me, Mutter Lomar Lo Achar HaShabbos. I can say to a non-Jew on Saturday night, Loma Lo Asisa Davar Ploni B'Shabbos Sha'avar, why didn't you do X on Shabbos? Avo Bisha Maven Mitoch Shemitoch Dvarav Sharitzono Shayasana B'Shabbos Haba. Even though that will make clear to this person that you want him to do it next week. That's what the Shulchan Aruch writes. It's a quote from the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos. I can ask him after Shabbos, why didn't you, as a hint for next week? But that's only because it's after Shabbos. I can't do so. Sorry?
So how is that different from doing the same thing before Shabbos?
It's not. Before Shabbos is fine also, if it's a hint like this. This is a hint. Because I don't say to him, do this for me. I say to him, why didn't you do it on Shabbos? That's what makes this work. But yes, Friday would be the same. However, on Shabbos, I can't do this hint. And the reason I can't do this hinting on Shabbos is because I still use the formula of instruction. There is an act that I wanted you to take care of, and that's instruction. So what I need to do is eliminate that. Take a look at Source Chav Gimel. The Mishnah Berurah's comment on this. Kishaomer haramiza le'enu Yehudi shalo balashon sivwe. When I hint to the non-Jew in a way that's not an instruction. Kigon sha'omer haner eno meir yafe. I say, you know what? This candle isn't shining well. Oh, eno yachol likros la'or haner hazeh. Or, eni yachol, I can't really read well by this light. She'esh bo pecham, because it has the charcoal built up at the end of the wick. Vishomeh ha'eno Yehudi umetakno, when the non-Jew hears and fixes it, shari, that's okay. De'ein zeh bechlal amira, that's not amira la'akum, because I hint without specifying the activity. I describe an existing condition. So, For me to enter into this by saying to the a non-Jew, I am I can't say to him I can't write. I say maybe I can say something along the lines of this woman has a phone number or something like that, and that doesn't mention writing, and then they can do what they deduce is needed on that basis. That would be okay. But this comes back to a major theme that we need to address throughout this, which is preparation before Shabbos. Because what I could do, since I'm allowed to hint before Shabbos, is say to the other people there, so who are working in the hospital with me, you should know in general I avoid writing on Shabbos. I saving lives, I'll always do whatever it is, but I avoid writing on Shabbos. If I say that to them, that's already good enough to let them know that's a heads up that things may come up and I may need them to do it, and it's a permissible hint in advance of Shabbos.
Can you not just say to the clerk, this lady has contact information?
Yes, that would be good enough. If I said this lady has contact information, I think that is sufficient. I believe that is sufficient. So that's my best option if I don't have the option of sending to somebody else to do this. If I don't have Amira da Amira. So now, should I consider this an option for vignettes 1 and 2? Is that in fact what I should be doing for vignettes 1 and 2? And the answer is absolutely not.
Yes. This woman, if you said to her, go tell the clerk to write it down, that's Amira da Amira because she's not Jewish.
Right, no, if I tell her, go ask the clerk to do it, then I'm in Amira da Amira territory. That's correct. The question is only if for some reason that's not an option for me. Such as the clerk is Jewish, so I don't want her going to the whatever, so I want to say to her something else that'll let her know without instructing her to, if she says, I have a phone number, I want to give you my phone number, you can say to her, there's paper over there.
Give it to me. There's paper there.
Yeah.
What if you're talking on the phone?
Then you can't say there's paper over there. Can I give you to somebody else? That you can say. Can I give you to somebody else? That's okay. Your phone has caller ID anyway, so they think that all of that. You unpractical. But going back to our previous cases, to vignette 1 and 2, take a look at source Chav Dalet, please. Vein osin dvarim halalu lo al yedei nachrim v'lo al yedei kutim el al yedei gedola Yisrael. If you're dealing with pikuach nefesh, you are not supposed to go to a non-Jew to perform the needed task. You do pikuach nefesh. You save the person's life. You don't ask. Somebody else should do it. Go ask somebody. And Tosfos explains it's a mitzvah for you to do it. And if you go to somebody else, you're outsourcing a mitzvah, which we don't do, and you have to be concerned. Maybe they're not going to do it as well as you would do it. Maybe they'll do it slower. Maybe it'll take time. When you go to somebody, you don't do that. We don't play games with pikuach nefesh. And vignette number 1, this is not an option. This is amira la'akum. Now, if you know that it is an option, you are the physician, you've seen this a million times, and you worked on the shift, and you know that you have the 5 minutes it's going to take you to go find someone who isn't Jewish and have somebody do it, then yes. Take a look at the last source. The Gemara in Shabbos, Chav Hei, Dabar She'en Bo Sakana Omer L'Nachmi Ba'Osef. There's no danger, so fine. So tell a non-Jew to do it. Then you go ahead and do it. So, for example, this is truly a case of Ein Bo Sakana, the case that we discussed a couple of years ago. The Nishmas Avram, quoter of Shlomo Zalman Orbach, a doctor in the ER has to dictate release papers to someone who isn't Jewish rather than write out the release papers himself. You find someone who isn't Jewish, let the person who isn't Jewish be the one to do the release papers. That you're not needed for that purpose. And Shlomo Zalman said, Du amira la'akum, don't write it in Hebrew. Don't have him write it in Hebrew. Those are your options. options. But in a pikuach nefesh case, you don't stall. So again, to review what we did, and then I'll take questions, and then I can go back to the disappearing ink. In terms of the first case, the first set of vignettes, the deteriorating or potentially deteriorating stroke victim, or the patient who shows up at the house and needs a prescription. So, if you see that this is a pikuach nefesh situation, you do violate Shabbos in order to take care of it. And even if you're in doubt, you still take care of it. We do try to minimize, because we say Shabbos is hutra, is dechuya rather than hutra. So we minimize by doing it in a language other than Hebrew. We try to do it as well, with a left hand. Keyboard would be better than even if they're going to print it out at the other end. To go back to that question about the non-Jewish pharmacist who's going to print it out at the other end, you didn't tell them to print it out at all. You sent them an email, which for their purposes, record keeping or whatever, they're going to print out. That's their business. So you didn't instruct them to write that down. So these are all good options.
Can I give another example of printing out?
Right, telephone also. Yes, sorry.
It was on telemetry, and you need a printout.
Mm-hmm.
Of the EKG.
Why do I need it? What am I doing with it?
It's not as clear. You need a paper copy to.
Right. So if it's not as clear, and I'm dealing with a dangerously ill patient, then I better print it out. Yeah, absolutely. It's part of. I mean, that's basic care of the patient. Yes.
You have to deal with the question of dictation in general, as a substitute for writing.
Dictation in general as a substitute for writing.
How do we record data?
Yeah.
We didn't raise the whole question of dictation.
You mean dictation into a recorder?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so dictation into a recorder would, as you said earlier about electromagnetic impulse in general, would not be considered writing on a biblical level. You are dealing with electricity, but there's no incandescent light and no filament that's burning, so therefore most authorities, certainly in a medical situation, are willing to say that it's a derabanan rather than a derais. Again, the Chazon Ish would disagree. He would say that completing a circuit is biblical, but the tendency would be to say, if this is part of patient care, it's a derabanan, and therefore should be warranted in a case of great pain, in a case of fill in the blank for whatever we're going to use to justify the derabanan. But certainly, if a patient is dangerously ill, that would be something that would be acceptable as part of the patient's care. Does that answer the question?
Well, I'm just thinking this might be a get around your problem of disappearing ink.
Yeah.
So
right.
Well,
right. No, it's true. I mean, disappearing ink would be in the same category as what Somed had regarding writing on the, typing it in on a keyboard. Yeah. Now, if I'm giving it to somebody and saying, transcribe this, then I have an Amir Alakum situation. So does that need to happen as part of it? But in fact, I would actually prefer the dictation into the recorder over typing it, because I'm doing fewer malachos, right? I push the button in the beginning and I push the button at the end, and that's it. I don't even need to push the button at the end. It can sit there recording however long it wants to. Whereas the typing, I'm doing a lot more, hitting it. Every time I hit a key, I'm sending an impulse. So it's better theoretically for me to be doing the recording. Yes. Transmitting the results of something that is normal. Would it be... Well, we had two challenges to that in terms of patient care, right? One challenge that we had to that was that if you're going to say that it's... that you're not going to record it, then when things do go off, you're not going to be able to know when they started going off. So that was one issue. And then a second issue was hospital protocols.
The wrong way to understand it. I think you should understand it backwards. Recording is the normal. Confirmed what was there before. You then reinforce a prior diagnosis, which means what you've done was correct, and you're still continuing to the previous care decisions you made.
So it tells me to continue the line of treatment.
The line of treatment, because it's different.
Right.
It's part of the initial decision.
Right. I hear that.
Right.
I guess that's another reason why. Ramban's position on doing what is routine for patient care, where that's the standard protocol, I think does apply here.
I think the question was, if I may, happened was that you're at home and you're a radiologist, and now you're asked if a CT shows a bleed, and then the fact that it's normal, now the question is, because it's normal, should you now transmit that back? And I think
that's more the type of issue.
Right, and I think that's the question. But I think that knowing the normal is very important to the emergency physician. You know, so the fact that it's normal doesn't change anything on you, the sender.
You can't treat the patient without knowing the result.
That's right. So something else then. So it's
right.
Still part of the patient.
Right. Now I believe that this is part of what Ramban is including in routine care of the patient. Yeah.
Robin,
yes.
In the second case.
Yeah.
And I want all the physicians in the room to correct me.
Okay.
If it's you said good health. Okay. From my experience as a pharmacist. If it's Friday night, until he gets it to Monte Shabbos, I would say yes. If it's Shabbos afternoon or Shabbos morning, depending, if the patient is immunosuppressed, there's no question about it. Or, for example, say it's 3 days Rosh Hashanah, and he comes to you the first night of Rosh Hashanah, you got Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, and there's no, to me, in my humble opinion, yes. But if he comes to you Shabbos afternoon, Shabbos Juba for those 3 days.
Right. So that's an interesting question. Right. So there's a difference here between what the halacha prescribes and what people feel in their gut. The halacha is far more lenient than people's guts. The halacha, as it's brought, says that something is called pikuach nefesh, even if it wouldn't actually kill the patient or deteriorate into that kind of a situation until after Shabbos. We start the treatment today. We don't say, on the other hand, as you point out, our gut says otherwise. In other words, I know that nothing is going to change between now and Saturday night. If I give them the treatment Saturday night, the patient will be just fine. The patient will avoid that problem. So from our gut perspective, we may be reluctant to do this, but I believe, I didn't bring the sources here on the sheet, so when I'm speaking without them in front of me, I was a little hesitant. But I'm fairly certain that we've discussed in other classes in this series last year that you treat on the basis of pikuach nefesh, even if that wouldn't become pikuach nefesh until after Shabbos. And I'll leave the physicians to dispute with you on the specifics of the danger from pneumonia. Other questions before I go into the disappearing ink, which is more academic. Okay, so the disappearing ink point, for those who can stay for it, if you can't, I'm fine with it, I understand. The Gemara in Shabbos defines writing as that which involves a lasting text. If you take a look in source Ches, the end of the source, if you see where I have my first ellipsis, those three dots in the middle of the second line, you can start with that. If you write with liquids, you write with fruit juice, you write with dust from the road, you write with the dust that scribes use to blot their ink, or anything that will not endure, Potter, you're exempt from biblical liability. It has to be miskayem. It has to endure in order for it to carry biblical liability. So the question is, when we say, actually no, I'm sorry, that wasn't the quote I should have used for this, but I didn't bring the quote I should have used. So the quote I should have used is a Mishnah in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Beis Amud Aleph, 102a. I'm looking on the sheet to see if I brought it, and I don't believe I did. So I'll say it outside of the. There I did. I'm sorry. Source Tes Zayin. There we go. Source Tes Zayin. Zeh Klal. Here's the general rule. The rule is, if one does malacha, and the malacha will endure on Shabbos, he is liable. Now, the word on Shabbos, bishabbos, modifies what in that sentence? That's the trick. Is it kol ha'ose malacha bishabbos umalachto miskayemes, one who does malacha on Shabbos, if his malacha will endure, he's liable? Or is it, one who does malacha is liable if his malacha will endure through Shabbos? The difference is my definition of enduring. Right? That's what matters here. So Rashi answers this question. Rashi's bothered by it. In Source Yud Zayin, B'Shabbos a'osem malacha koi. It's going back to one who does malacha. In other words, the standard is not that the malacha has to endure through Shabbos. One who does malacha on Shabbos is liable if it endures. That's the way that Rashi understands it, in which case he has not defined enduring. Right? One who does malacha on Shabbos, and it endures. He doesn't say how long endurance actually is. Take a look at the Rambam in Source Yud Ches. If you dye thread, which is four tefach long, four tefach being a significant length, or if someone dyes a length of thread that would be useful for spinning things or whatever it is, chayav, he's liable. And he's not liable unless the dye will last. But if it won't last, so in any case in which one's work will not endure, Potter, one is exempt from liability. So so he doesn't tell me what the duration is. He doesn't give me... Same language, correct, same language. I don't get a specification of how long it actually has to endure. So from this we can say that maybe writing that won't endure ad infinitum, now no writing endures ad infinitum, but maybe writing that won't endure for a reasonable period of time is not actually called writing. It is possible to argue otherwise, that writing may be different from other malachos. That writing may actually not be called writing, even if it disappears many days later. In other words, maybe you'll tell me for dyeing it has to last for 3 days or something like that. Maybe writing has to really be able to last interminably, because we say in other halachos it does. If someone writes a get and the get is such that is written in such a way that it will in fact fade after a month, that's not a get. So maybe the argument should be writing has to be in, so to speak, permanent ink. Dr. Aziz is the first. Okay, Albert.
I obviously don't quite understand. It says very clearly the limit here.
Yeah.
It says mitkayemet bishabbat.
Rashi doesn't.
Right, but the thing is, Rashi says bishabbat was back on ha'osem malacha. Rashi wrote that explicitly.
That's not what the Rambam says. The Rambam says mitkayemet bishabbat.
I'm sorry, that's right. No, you caught me. Thank you. It's fine, I just put a question mark in my notes because I wrote what you said on the Rambam, but I didn't see it in the quote. That's the word that I wanted. The Rambam statement is that it has to last through Shabbos. Rashi says that it has to... Rashi doesn't give me a definition. The Rambam does give me a definition of saying it has to last through Shabbos, correct? And apparently, it depends then on when during Shabbos I'm writing this. There could be an hour left till Shabbos ends. There could be 20 hours left until Shabbos ends. It's definitely still prohibited rabbinically to use fading ink, and the Mishnah Berurah stresses that. But the question remains: how soon should this writing disappear? So the Minchas Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Weiss, who's quoted in the Nishmas Avram, says that it's 24 hours. Not till Shabbos ends. He says 24 hours is the standard. However, the Nishmas Avram, it's Chelak Aleph. Sorry? That was a good pun. Thank you. It was a good pun. He said May 8 la 8. 8 meaning 10. For those, yeah. And that also means 24 hours in May 8 la 8 is a reference from this time today till this time tomorrow. So that's the idea. Thank you. The Nishmas Avram in Chelak Aleph in Reish Mem Ches number 248, he says 3 or 4 days. Quoting with Shlomo Zalman, is the standard. Why 3 or 4 days? Where does 3 or 4 days come from? So I emailed him to ask him. It's Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer. Avram, the Talmud Muvak of Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, the Tzitz Eliezer, as well as Shlomo Zalman. And I asked him what this was about. Where did he get 3 or 4 days from? And he said he thinks the number came about because it was when they were working on developing ink that would last through 2 days of Rosh Hashanah and Shabbos, and then it would be transcribed afterwards. So Shlomo Zalman was answering the question at hand, saying 3 or 4 days would still count as disappearing ink. He wasn't giving a maximum. He was simply saying 3 or 4 days is still within the disappearing ink window. That was his explanation.
How do you get a 3-day Yom Tov in Israel?
Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah.
This year, Rosh Hashanah.
Right. That's correct. It's the only one that you only need one for it to happen. But one key note on this: the fact that something is erasable and the fact that you erase it doesn't make it the equivalent of disappearing ink. That's not the same thing. If you write with pencil, and it will last for however long, the fact that you, after Shabbos, erase it doesn't help. It has to be that it would be a disappearing ink. So that Tzomet in Israel came up with a Shabbat, as they call it, that has disappearing ink. But like I said before, it's mostly academic for us. We generally use the other options, and they themselves said the Shabbat is inferior as a halachic option to typing it on the keyboard, or I think the dictation option as well, the telephone option being in that same category, they have of choices. So, God willing, the Shari Shamayim series continues next Monday night.